This week on RSVNB Update, the Quest Point Shop is here, and we have a full rundown of the unlocked tracks and which one is best. Also, the Questers are finally paid reparations for years and years of hard work, and another disappointing Facebook privacy bombshell. This is RSVNB Update, episode 690, recorded Thursday, September 27th, 2018. Quest Reparations. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us once again for another episode of RSVNB Update. Tanis and myself are here, as we are each and every week. Welcome back, Tanis.
Thank you, Shane. How you doing?
Good, good. And also joining us this week to talk about the Quest Point Shop is Derp from Clan Quest. You guys remember him? He was on back in April, I believe it was. And, you know, I figure it's good to have someone on from Clan Quest about the Quest Point Shop, right?
It seems like it would fit, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so, thanks for having me again.
So the Quest Point Shop, you know, this was a bit of an update that surprised everyone when it was announced in the behind the scenes for the month. It was something that was, you know, pulled before in surveys and whatnot, and has since come up again numerous times and time again in the surveys. Now, basically, the idea behind this was to reward Questers for all the hard work that they've done over time with this. And, you know, I think that that's a perfectly good thing to do, because when you think about it, questing is all fine and dandy, and you get a few little rewards along the way. But when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, Questers really just have their Quest Point cape and maybe the Master Quest cape, and, you know, maybe a title along the way. But there's really not much else that they can use with their for all their achievements, right? So,
yeah, you have developed copious amounts of patience, though.
We have
to be a Quester. Well, yeah, I mean, to get through a quest and those puzzles, and, you know, I mean, you can apply that to real life.
Okay,
so, I'm just saying. Yeah,
all right,
that's fair enough.
And Derp, you've done it more than once. You now have a Quest Point cape on an Iron Man alt.
Yeah, it's not an Iron Man, but I do have it on my alt. And I also had it on a separate alt like a year ago.
Okay.
But yeah, wow. I've done my fair share of questing. Yeah.
And
I love it.
And that's...
Did you lose a bet or something?
actually, we were a friend of mine and I were racing this one. Like, we're actually racing till Quest Point cape and max. I did this one in like 4.5 months, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Always nice.
Fun.
Yeah.
So if there's anyone to talk about the Quest Point cape, we got the people here for that this week. So
that's for sure. Wow.
Basically, what you have with the Quest Point cape is you have a little shop that's specifically to the southwest of the Varrock Lodestone. And in particular, you might be realizing that this is right next door to the Champions Guild, which, I mean, when you think about it, that's a perfect place to put it. It's not somewhere we go all that often, but it certainly is iconic. I believe the start point for Dragon Slayer was also near there, so very iconic when it comes to RuneScape questing. You talk to May there, and basically, when you get there, you are rewarded based on the number of quest points you have completed. If you have done all the quests, you'll have currently 399 quest points, and with that, you can pretty much unlock. Let me do some quick math here. Each track, there's three tracks that you can unlock, and each of them takes 150 quest points to unlock. So you can unlock two full tracks, and you can basically with that unlock 2/3 of another track along the way. So I think that's a good progress, and it gives us people who have been doing quests for a while something to aim for and something to strive for when we get more quest points inevitably in the future. So early thoughts on this. What was your first impression going in?
My first impression was I hoped it was good, but because a lot of things in this area turn out to not be all that good, I was a little skeptical.
Okay.
Just because, like, I've been saying for a long time that quests need much better rewards. I mean, I know the lore is supposed to be a reward in of itself, but let's face it, that's not always enough. And it seems like every time we do get a good quest reward, then they nerf it, and they just nerf it out of existence. So it's, you know, that's always been like a real sticking point with me. So I wasn't holding out a lot of hope that this was going to be good. But actually, I think it turned out really well.
All right.
And it gives you a little bit of, like you said, it gives you something. It gives you a little something added to just your normal quest rewards. And some useful items for the people that have difficulty with some of the combat bosses, challenges.
Yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that. So it seemed pretty well thought out and pretty, you know, put together pretty well.
All right. How about you, Derp?
Yeah, it seems like it was hard to find a balance between like all the new players who still have to complete all the quests and then all the players, the thousands of players who already have a quest cape and just get all the rewards just at once. Mm-hmm. So like, there's probably like a few thousand players who already have the quest point cape and now just get like 14.5 million coins.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
like all the fortunates and stuff.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that 14.5 million coins.
Yeah.
So you get a number of magic dice. You get three tier or four tier one, two, and three magic dice, and three tier four magic dice, because presumably the fourth tier four magic dice will unlock at the 400th quest point. Now, the tier one magic dice gives you 250,000 GP and an easy clue scroll reward. Tier two gives you 500K and a medium clue scroll reward. Tier 3 gives you 1 million GP and a hard clue scroll reward, while the Tier 4 dice gives you 2.5 million GP and an elite clue scroll reward for a grand total of 14.5 million GP, plus whatever you're able to sell the treasure trail items for. But as we know with how the economy is set up today, treasure trail items don't sell, and you basically disassemble them for fortunate components.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, there was some talk when this came out, you know, is this intended? Is this a good thing for the game? But you know, everyone looking at this has a high quest point amount already, right? So with that, you know, we're getting this lump sum, but if you're, you know, just starting out, you're doing this over your entire span of adventuring in RuneScape. And when you put it that way, 14.5 million GP is not that much at all. So,
no, I mean, I look at it like we're just getting some reparations for all the hell we had to go through with these quests. I mean, no.
Yeah.
I've never thought that I would need a reparation for a quest.
Do you remember Morning's End Part 2? Or
yeah.
One small favor?
Yeah. I actually like the puzzle in Morning's End Part 2.
One small favor doesn't deserve the hate it gets.
You're such a sadist.
I did not like One Small Favor.
It's so funny.
Yes,
you actually read the dialogue and just go through.
It was funny for about the first six things you had to go and get, but beyond that,
yeah, right,
Artisan's Workshop. I mean, I should have been paid for that.
Oh, Elemental Workshop.
Elemental Workshop, and then. They screwed up my dark light. That's the 14 mil.
What?
They're paying me for screwing
because
up my dark
was,
light.
Oh, right, that was an item after Defender of Varrok that was effectively a tier 90 weapon against any kind of demon, but they had to nerf it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they, in hindsight, I think they should have left it that way. Because that is an elite quest, and they should have got to that point and allowed it to be like that. So,
yeah.
And you can also get dyes for doing this.
Yeah.
You can.
Yeah. I didn't. You didn't, Tannis. Derp didn't, but Derp does know someone who did. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Just got a Barrow's die.
Oh, wow. Good on him. That's cool.
Way too lucky.
Do we know if the luck of the dwarves affected this at all?
I don't think they did, but I'm not sure.
I would doubt it. I mean, I was wearing mine.
Okay.
I never take mine off.
All right. Yeah,
so.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. So let's then just have a look now at some of the other potential unlocks that you can get for the quest point shop. So there's three tracks, and perhaps I think the most interesting track is the armor and weapon track. And this unlocks a set of armor that goes from 25 to 50 to 75 hybrid level, depending on your character. And you unlock the full set for it, you know, helmet, plate, body, legs, and ultimately a sword or a staff or a crossbow. And this is much like the weapon at the end of the Vampire series in that it will change its combat style depending on what you desire. So the weapon in this is actually a good questing weapon because if you need a staff, you can convert it to a staff. If you need a two-handed sword, you can do that. Or if you need a bow, you can do that as well. So there is no penalty for being assigned, you know, or having it act as a bow, but you might want a staff. So that's good about this. And, you know, it's hybrid armor. I don't know if anyone doing quests is going to need or want to use hybrid armor in this. I'm still not a fan of hybrid armor. What do you guys think?
No, I'm not a fan of it either, but the set bonus is what probably makes it, you know, important to people doing quests.
And that set bonus is the amazing part of this. And that is that when you're wearing the armor, each and every time you die fighting a quest boss, your defense will go up by one percentage point, up by a maximum of 5%, thereby making yourself more resilient against these bosses. And the same thing also happens for your weapon. Its damage increases by 1% each time up to a maximum of 5%. So for those struggling on Nomad or Sliskay's Endgame, this is going to help a lot for that. And, you know, granted, you can say it's tier 75, but I don't think there's much in quest that you need beyond tier 75 to kill.
I think the weapon even increases by 5% every death up to 25%.
Oh, really? I thought it was just...
Yeah.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the 1% is also for each set piece. So if you have the entire set and per death, you also take a 5% damage reduction. Also up to 25%. So it's really powerful.
Oh, really? Oh, I thought it was just 5% for the entire set. But if it's, you know, 5% for each piece, that is immaculate. That's even better than I thought it was.
Yeah, that's going to get you through some of these. I mean, I wish I had that with Birthright, because I had a hell of a time with that boss, you know.
Birthright on release, yeah, that was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that one was bad. That one was bad, actually. And, you know, I think it was due to a lot of the combat that they went with there, too. So, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So that's the combat track. And in total, this is going to cost you 150 quest points to unlock this track. And obviously, I think this is the one people are going to go for right off the bat, right? If they're questing.
Yeah. If people don't actually have the quest point cape yet, then they should. They will.
Okay. Wow. I still can't get over that. I thought it was only 5%. Well, you learn something new every day.
Yeah, it's so powerful. It's insane.
All right. Let's see if we can top that. The next one is the pet track, and the pet track unlocks the Lorehound pet. And this pet has a number of bonuses to it, including providing quest supplies such as rope and emergency law runes, just to name a few. It also has the ability to increase area loot range as well, if you're interested in that. I know lots of PVM Slayer types are going to be.
Oh, I was really close to getting that because I thought, ooh, that would be great.
But yeah, yeah. But you didn't?
No, I didn't. I went with the first route and the last route.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
Yeah, I think the thing with the Lorehound is that it isn't a legendary pet, so it does a lot of potential like right at the bat.
Right.
And it's just really only useful in those specific scenarios when you don't need a legendary pet or anything.
Yep.
Should they have made this a legendary pet?
Why not?
I mean they give so much to everyone else. If they're giving it to questers, why not, right?
I think that would be the first legendary pet actually available through gameplay and not.
And that would have been good.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, it would have been. They probably would have hurt their bottom line or something.
But who doesn't have a legendary pet today?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I have one just from Twitch Prime. You got the Prime Colossus, you know? I mean,
and if you bought the Premier Club back in 2015, you got one for free as well.
Yeah.
It can also provide a light source, the Bullseye Lantern, a spade. So you could effectively do a URIT with that. It can also pull books from your bookcase and your POH if you're interested in using it for that. We already talked about area loot beam or area loot range increases, but it also increases the chance for some Master Quest Cape lore drops by 25% when the lore hound is active.
Yeah, if you're going for the Master Quest Cape,
that's the
trek you want.
That's the one, yeah. Definitely.
Last Riders, King Black Dragon. No more suffering.
Well, you got to remember it's probably going to be a multiplicative 25%, not just plus 25%.
Yeah,
so.
Too bad.
Yeah. Now, the final one is the hub track, as they're calling it. And basically what you unlock with this is the adventurer title, the ability to start to the or teleport to the start point of a quest, the quest ring that lets you transform yourselves into various quest NPCs. That's a fun one. Access to improved rewards from Meg.
Yeah.
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 Bank chest at the hub. That's actually good for farming there, by the way, because that's right where the grape patch is. And then a quest item storage box, which, I think we could all use it at this point in time. So
I think that's the best item on this whole thing is the quest item storage. Like, that track has some of the best and lamest prizes, but that quest item storage, man, it's great. And the reason it's great is that it takes up so much bank room for all these old quest items, right? But the minute you get rid of something, they come out with a quest. You need it. You know how many times I've had to go get Gloriel's pebble and a necklace back?
Yeah.
You know, like,
I actually had that in my bank. I had a tab dedicated to quest items.
I mean, I do too, but like, I don't want that tab there. It's not good for anything. You know what I mean? Like, unless a quest comes out. So like, that storage is great. I haven't quite figured out exactly how it works and why some things don't seem to be in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's actually talk about that right now because, actually, before we do that, I'll just say that at 200 quest points, you unlock a pet. I believe that one is Spot. And then at 300 quest points, you unlock the Helmet of Trials, which is a cosmetic override. And then at 400 quest points, we're going to unlock something called Rover as well. So there are two other general milestone unlocks that we can expect going forward with this. So let's talk about this because, you know, we obviously are at a point here where we have lots of bank space that we need freed up. And, you know, when it comes down to it, we're all suffering on that. I managed to clear up 25 bank spots in my bank with these items that were just sitting in my quest point tab. And these include the bear head, the armadillo pendant, the boots of lightness, the bull roarer, the cabbage speak amulet, the holy ranch remora's necklace, the cat training medal, the ring of charos, the ice gloves, the ring of visibility, the invitation box, the ring from Sliske's endgame, the calm orb, the cabbage speak amulet, the dark light, the silver light, the Disc of Returning from the Gower quest, the improved Ingrimitor, the skull. Then I don't remember what the other ones are, but you know, you definitely can save a lot of these items. And you know, there is a list on the RuneScape wiki. I'm mentioning the RuneScape wiki. We'll talk more about that in just a bit. There's a list of items on the RuneScape wiki that you can store here. And you know, most of the things here make sense. The only things that I was surprised that weren't on here were the sled from the first dwarf quest.
Yes. Yep.
And the Grigris were not on here. The monkey Grigris.
Yeah.
Those ones were not on here.
I think the Greekies had like an update a few months or maybe a year ago where you can combine them all into one giant Greekery.
Yeah, they did. They did.
Yeah.
They did.
So that's already kind of measured to save bank space, I guess.
I guess, but I mean, still, I mean, some people might not use them all the time. Let's see, what else is on here? The color wheel is on here from Morning Zen Part 2. The Seal of Passage from the early Fremenet quest. Both the Shard of Maw and Shard of Zaros you can store in here if you never have any inclination to use them in either God Wars Dungeon. The Six Age Circuit, which is actually a pretty decent ring.
But, yeah, that's actually useful.
Yeah. Though, I mean, we don't have – we have Luck of the Dwarves, though, and Luck of the Dwarves doesn't have stats on it. So –
yeah, but I mean, Six Age Circuit, that gets you to the World Gate and the Automatron.
Why do you need need that for the World Gate? You can just use the teleport to the player owned farm.
For the World Gate?
Six Age Circuit is not World Gate. That's the Guthix's place.
Yeah, but you can go to the World Gate.
Oh, really?
It's also World Gate. Yeah.
That's how I get to like crystal shapeshifters and
loose
spots.
No idea you could use that to teleport to the World Gate.
Yeah, man, you gotta kill more stuff. Poke it in the eye. You know that.
But yeah, there's this huge list here, and you know, looking this up here, you're gonna be able to save at least, you know, if you had all these items in your bank, you're gonna be able to save at least, you know, 50 plus bank spaces off of this. So I don't know if anyone has all these in their bank, but it's definitely a bank space saving opportunity for this. So
yeah, I had a lot, and I was a little confused because when I opened up the storage thing, it looked like it had a bunch of items already in it.
Yep, and those are the ones that you've dropped in the past.
Oh.
Yeah. So if you've dropped them in the past but didn't have them in your bank, they would appear in the storage box.
I got you. Okay. Because there were still items in my bank where I'm like, wait a minute, this should be in there. Like, it was like the bowl.
Yeah, they
the
didn't,
bowl horn,
they didn't
stuff
remove
like
all
that.
So you basically need to, if you had, say, the bear head or the bull roar in your bank, you would need to remove it from your bank, drop it on the ground, then it would appear in the quest storage box.
Oh, sweet. So I don't even have to go there.
You just drop them. Yeah.
Oh, man. You know what else, Shane, this is doing?
What's
bank
that?
Bank rework, anyone?
Yeah, see?
Another little something.
Just, you know, offset these things. And then when the mining and smithing beta or rework comes out, you're not going to have any ores and bars in your bank. So there's another 20-plus inventory spots in your bank you can save.
I'm telling you, once you get placeholders, it's done.
Yeah, see, I don't, you know, I said this when they were talking about the bank rework. I don't think they need a bank rework.
No, I don't think so. Not if you keep giving us things like this. This is perfect. That's why it was the first thing that I unlocked. I saw a quest storage items. I'm like, yeah.
And you know, the bright side is you can reset your track every week. So if a quest comes out, you can switch to the Lorehound and the armor track next week. And then you'll lose access to the storage box, of course, but all the items will still be in there when you come back to it.
Okay. Well, the other thing I like about that particular track, though, is the quest point start, because you know, you are it, and I didn't enjoy that. So,
though knowing Jagex, they would have disabled that for you are it.
Ugh.
Dave Police just running around Magruba's Forest trying to find the start location.
Find that correct tree.
I'm just clear cutting the place like I'm, you know, lumberjack.
Also, just a couple of comments on the interface on this, and I think Sirion has touched on this in his Informer article, informer.rsbnb.com, for that. If you click on one of the nodes inside the tree, you'll get a explainer on the right hand side of the window. And the unfortunate side of this is that it covers part of the interface, and you're not able to exactly see what's going on with that. So the downside of that is that, you know, a chunk of the scroll bar, 20% of the scroll bar, is covered up. And, you know, if you scroll to the end, you're not going to be able to see what the last rewards are that easily. So It's something I think that, you know, could have been done with a fly out rather than a fly in. Just because, you know, as you're scrolling by, it is obscuring the vision. Though it does look like when you scroll to the end, you're still able to see the final box. So, I mean, I guess that's okay, but still, I mean, I think it would have been a better way to do a fly out rather than a fly in menu on that. And then the second thing is you see rewards and unlocks.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between those two?
Yeah.
And rewards are, of course, what you get as you're moving your quest points up, and those are all the magic dice and whatnot and all the treasure trail items. So that's what rewards are. Unlocks are the tech tree. I believe what that should have been called was the quest tech tree. And, I mean, at this point, that's a minor niggle at best, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I didn't, you know.
But anyways. So let's talk about the ring. This is going to be fun to play around with. The ring that lets you transform yourselves into other NPCs. Who was the first one you guys transformed yourselves into?
Hazelmere.
Yeah, Hazelmere.
Back.
Yeah. I hadn't used it yet.
So. All right.
Yeah, I mean, after I got a ring to, you know, transform myself into a package, I mean, what else would I, what else could I ever want?
You can transform yourself into Carapack.
That one's cool, too.
Vanstrom Klaus. That's a fun one. Then we have Zanuck. And, you know, there's some questions about what Zanuck model it would be, and it's the new Zanuck model. I know there's still some division in the community about what Zanuck model is best. Personally, it doesn't bother me. Hazelmere, of course, we know how important Hazelmere is and how that looks and his unfortunate death that he met in Wolgothic Sleeps. So there's that. There's also the Wise Old Man. I thought that one was fun. I thought the Wise Old Man one was fun, mainly because the Wise Old Man version actually has a higher fidelity party hat than the other players do. And I mean, I'm sure he has that on his model in Draenor right now, but it's fun to see your character sitting here as the Wise Old Man like that. So I enjoyed cool. The Wise Old Man. And then the last one is Jared. So I don't know who's going to transform into that, but hey, those are the options on that one. Good for some costume places in quests.
Yeah, the werewolf, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'll do that for Halloween. There we go.
Yeah, yeah. But unfortunately, you can't walk around when you're transformed.
Ah, boo.
Yeah, that's the sad part.
Yeah,
they need to figure it out.
It's like a ring of stone. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then there's also the quest notice board at the back. And basically what that does is it has a current list of who has completed every quest in RuneScape recently. And, you know, we forget this. We have max quest points, right? But we forget mm-hmm. that there's always people completing quests. And if you look at this, you know, there's people, there's maybe someone maybe completing You Are It. Maybe someone completing One Small Favor. Maybe someone, you know, completing Wolf Whistle. So you just have to look at this notice board and it pops up. So that's fun. It's kind of like a throwback, right?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the biggest thing for me, it was a memory lane trip down memory lane, and going through the bank and removing all these quest items. And, you know, for the most part, you know, looking through them, oh, that was from Legends Quest. That was from, you know, Morning's End Part 2, so on and so forth. I enjoyed that part. You guys remember the Boots of Lightness and how you always used to be able to use those before the agility run rework?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, good memories. Good memories. yeah, I don't know if there's much else to say on this in particular in regards to the rewards or the tech trees on this. I'd like to see more tech trees like this in game in the future. I think this is a good example of rewarding player choice and, you know, kind of penalizing it as well for a bit. You know, we still have 51 quest points to go before people will be able to unlock everything. So.
Oh, jeez. Well, forget that. 51 points.
Yeah.
You might get five a year if you're on a good year.
Yeah. The way we've been going.
So maybe for Jagex's 25th, we might get finish the quest point shop.
We do know Quest Point 400 will come this year.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, overall, this was good. I'd like to see a tech tree like this come out from Invention, but I mean, I guess we're not going to get that at this point. It's just good. I really like it. So.
Yeah,
I think it turned out well. I've yet to meet someone who is displeased with this update, aside from the people who are fear-mongering about the economy on day one.
There was one other thing about the updated mech rewards, where she now gives, I think it's a role on the Motherload Maw table. So now mech can just give out Ketsi scrolls and that kind of stuff.
Really?
Yeah. There were some Reddit posts about this, I think. Someone getting like 2 Ketsi scrolls from Meg.
Well, I might have to hit up old Meg again. How you doing?
Yeah.
You know,
all right.
You know, I never really liked dealing with her, but if that's going to be an option, we might just have to.
Shane, no one likes dealing with her, but, you know, she's...
Sometimes I would send her on journeys that would end badly just out of spite.
I think Meg is the moped of RuneScape, you know. Like, she's a lot of fun to ride, but you don't want your friends to catch you on one.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just trying to think of where we could go with that and how this could, if that improves the improves someone's desire to be on the Meg track.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna see what she's been up to now.
Yeah, okay, that's the hub track. So I mean, I guess if you have the bank, that works.
I think people were mostly just angry with the fact that Rune Dragon drops are just getting extremely devalued this year with Elite Dungeons. Like dropping all their rare drops and then the Ketsi scrolls being available through ports. People didn't really like this, I guess. And I think that's fair enough.
Yeah. Well, you got to give a little and you got to take a little, right? And I mean, there has to be balance with this. And I think we're long past due for questers to get their time in the sun with this. So I think we're fine on this. Yeah. I don't have anything else on this. Are you guys good?
Yeah, I'm good. I think it was a pretty good update.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean,
I told you it'd be fine.
You did.
Yeah.
I did.
That's good.
All right, so let's move on to the patch notes right now. And these patch notes is something that Tanis has been waiting for about a month now.
Yeah.
I'm going to start with that one just because I think it's the biggest one here and the most important one for this podcast. And that's that unchecked dragon eggs and spider eggs now have a loot beam when they're received as a drop.
Woo-hoo, yes! Yay! Jagex, I'll give a golf clap. Yes!
Because that's good amazing. Job. We laugh about it and whatnot, and there's the text indicator, but it's a major accessibility issue for people
major.
Like you.
Yeah,
yeah.
And when you go dry, it makes you wonder, like, did I miss it, or did it really?
Yeah.
Have I really not gotten a drop for the last 5 hours? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm so glad. I was hoping they would do that.
Yeah. And all it takes is two. All it takes is a male and female, and then you're off on the farm. Currently, I have like 7 or 8 dragons, I believe.
Yeah, I'm my dragons are rocking. So.
Yeah. Corrected a message when buying the bank chest upgrade on the Manor Farm. Previously, with this update, it would say that it added the chest near the breeding pen, and obviously, we know it's not near the breeding pen. So that's just a fun little one. Milton the Miller, the North Ardoyan Mill, has a farming shop icon once again. You know, you got to love these guys' names, hey? Milton the Miller.
Milton the Miller. Okay.
Small tweaks have been made to increase the odds of a shiny animal. Okay. I like the mystery, but obviously, I mean, after a month, you're seeing that things need to shift and become a little bit more common. So it's fine. After unlocking the bank chest at the Manor Farm, it will now provide bank functions like auto-healing, keepsaking, and the ability to activate the magic skill cape perk, and so on. Good.
Good.
Yeah. Also, unchecked eggs for dragons and spiders now have a loot beam. We already talked about that, but we'll just mention it again. Very fun. Very fun. Maybe I should go back to dragons. What do you think? And try and get some more.
I think the price has dropped like a lot since release.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be going to sell them. I'd be going to get them for myself. I'd like to get some green ones. I currently just have blues and reds. So somehow my blue dragons have produced two red dragons. I don't know how.
Huh. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously something happened there. Potions newly introduced at the player-owned farm can now be decanted manually. Okay, that's good. We definitely want that. Players can now add jellyfish, blue and green, to the food trough. Last week it was sailfish. Oh, this week it's jellyfish.
Yeah, I tried that early and you couldn't do it.
Why would you put jellyfish in?
Why not? I mean, I don't know. It was I had it in the bank. I wanted to get rid of them. So.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Collecting honey from the Manor Farm apiary will now contribute towards filling your farming urns. Is that what they call that area where the bees sit? An apiary?
Apparently.
Huh.
Who knew?
Yeah.
You learn something new every day.
That's a new word for me. And that doesn't happen often. All right. You no longer get a message that you need inventory space when opening the farmer's market with a full inventory. This was caused by a redundant check on the farm totems, and we've instead moved the check to a requirement for buying the totems. As a result, totems will now appear locked if you don't have space to buy one. Okay. And they have also improved the chances to breed a Daemon Cap Zygomite. So, all in all, a little bit... increases here and there for shiny animals all around. So I think we're rounding out the farm after 3 weeks, and it's, you know, finally getting to the point where it's balanced and it's working as intended. That's not to say it wasn't, though, when it first came out. All in all, a good update on this. So and I don't know about you guys, are you guys still engaging with the farm daily?
Oh yeah.
I haven't really started engaging with it. Farming is not my favorite skill.
We'll have to change that at some point. We'll have to change that. Just wait till you feel the love of the toad flax seed. Right, Tanis?
That's right, man. I've been doing my runs.
What's your record now?
You know, I don't know because I have porters on.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not sure.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah.
That's smart, actually, bringing porters on hyperruns. Right. Nice.
Yeah, I've actually never thought of that as well. That's good, Tanis. That's good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
And it kind of removes the need for the farming cape perk, but hey.
I mean, I still wear it, but...
Okay.
Know.
All right. Yeah. All right. the key ring now appears on the tool belt, allowing players to store keys on their tool belted key ring. I cannot count the number of years we've been waiting for that.
That took a while, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And you know what's good about this is they actually took the key ring out of your bank and added it to the tool belt for you.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I was wondering where it went, but it was already on the tool belt, so that was good. An update to spirit gems so that if they're converted back into their unused form, players will be informed if it's a combined gem and given the option to either gain extra charges as separate gems or discard them entirely. So if you convert them all to an onyx, you can convert it back to its whatever's unused. So you can kind of get the change off of it. If you're done summoning and you want to, you know, store it somewhere else or maybe just discard it, you can break it apart that way. So,
okay.
I'm storing these for the eventual time that I need to go for 120 summoning. But, you know, in the meantime, I have no use for them. So.
Yeah,
keep them, though, because, man...
Yeah, we heard about that on Double XP weekend.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah. Now some more changes for mobile. The world map zoom feature has been updated to be more gradual on mobile while utilizing the pinch gesture, and the zoom buttons on the world map will still function as they did before. They've also added a contextual keyboard for Android, and this means that the keyboard will automatically change based on the input field, where withdraw X, for example, would bring up a numeric keyboard. And, you know, this is the second week in a row here where we're seeing mobile changes into the main game, so you know what that means, right?
It's coming.
It's coming soon. Yeah. Coming soon.
It's coming.
Yeah. I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say that either at RuneFest or the day after RuneFest, that Monday, they're going to release the beta for RS3.
That'd be cool.
I hope so.
I think that's where we're headed on this.
Man. Now I'm going to have to like fight the rest of my family for the iPad. Come on. I got to do this. It's work. Come on.
Well, I'm sure a plus size phone will be fine with it, you know, all things considered. Though maybe an iPad would be best.
Not for me, though.
But oh, yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. That'll be interesting to see, actually, for accessibility.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Because, you know, a lot of games don't work with voiceover and stuff. So
yeah.
I'll have a whole thing to talk about, you know, on the show for that.
Yeah. You will no longer be logged out upon trying to enter Het's Hidden Room in a free-to-play world. Okay. That was from some quest, I believe. And
yeah, I think it's the one unlocked after our Man in the North.
Like yes.
The dual arena, the statue thing.
Yeah, trying to go into that Elder God place. And finally, opening the world map in the Zanaris Ferry headquarters no longer crashes the game client.
So yeah, we don't want that.
Yeah, that's bad. So there we have it. There's our patch notes for the week. Overall, pretty good, I think.
Yeah.
So,
the loot beam is the patch note of the year for me.
Okay, for you?
Yeah.
All right. I know Tycho and others thought that the key ring was.
Yeah, but you know, I don't go anywhere where I can use that. A loot beam, that affects my gameplay.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, we talk about RuneScape a lot here, and one of the other things that they're bringing up this week is another survey. They're saying, survey time, the future of RuneScape. This is a big survey. This is a survey with over 50 questions. You can expect it to take north of 20 minutes of your time to complete. It's basically a survey that is attempting to learn everything about everyone who plays RuneScape. They want to know where you're located, how old you are, what you do, what your education level is, what type of RuneScape you play, how often you play RuneScape, what you would like to see added to RuneScape is one thing as well. Also, in particular, what other kind of games you play, what kind of games you would like to see RuneScape expanded to. I'm not going to go through the entire survey because it is huge. It is massive. But if you do complete the survey, you will be entered to win a $50 Amazon voucher, equivalent of your country's currency. And five lucky participants will receive a huge 60 by 40 centimeter print of the RuneScape map of Gelenor, as we saw in the album cover last week.
It looks so cool.
Yeah.
I would love to win that.
Yeah.
Love to win that.
Yeah, that would be really good. And, you know, they even got, you know, on here, like they got Prif and they got Tyrannan, and then you see where the Lost Grove is. And then you see, you know, apparently we're all living in the same universe here. You see Zaya and whatnot as well, which Old School has. So that's all there, too. So you have a chance to win that. Now, on this survey, there are a number of interesting questions to me. The first interesting question is, and I don't know why they need to ask this today, but the question was, how often while playing RuneScape are you doing something else? Are you watching TV? Are you playing another game? Are you listening to music?
Well, I mean, 99.9% of people are probably at least listening to music, if not something else.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
So that was asked. It was also asked, where do you play mobile games? You know, on transit, on the couch is another option. So obviously they are looking at mobile for this.
You know, I wonder why they didn't have socializing, talking with friends on like a voice chat, because that is so much more prevalent now, I think, than it was early on. That, you know, I think a lot of us are socializing while we're playing via Discord, you know.
Yeah, and you know, that was one of the options in terms of what social platforms you use weekly. So Discord was on that list, Reddit was on that list, Twitter was on that list, Twitch was on that list, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
So it was there was a section for how do you socialize with other players. Now, the next question that I want to draw attention to was, what would you like to see added to RuneScape in the future in terms of storylines that you could focus on? And there's a whole list of things you could check off. I mean, you could check off the Elemental Workshop series, which I think everyone wants to do. You could check off elves. You could check off the Fremenic. You could check
elves off.
Yeah, expanding the Saren story. You could expand the Saren storyline.
I thought that was done. I thought we're done. I thought the elves are done.
Well, they could be. I mean, but there was also the Majorat, Zaros, gnomes, pirates. And I mean, I think the pirates ended their initial quest line, but they did end up kind of on a cliffhanger in the quest this year. So there's that.
Yeah.
Now, the ones that were most interesting to me were options of seeing the first stage when humans first arrived on Gilanor from Terragard. That was something they said we could see. We could also see the Avian's world of Abana, which everyone's been wanting for a long time.
Rite of Passage, yes.
Yeah, Rite of Passage. There was also the Second Age with the Zaros faction wars and whatnot. There's also the Fourth Age of the Elves and whatnot we could see. Then it got really interesting. And I don't know what would herald this in, but there was an option to see, quote, Gilanor in the near future, the Seventh Age.
Yeah.
So, like, moving on
from the Sixth Age into the Seventh Age.
That will be so quick.
It would be. And, you know, we talked about this last week, Tanis. You kill gods off willy-nilly and whatnot. You kill Guthix off. You kill a number of them off. We dealt with Sliske and that entire arc. Now we have to, you know, presumably deal with the Elder Gods. So I guess the question to that is, what's the conclusion of the Sixth Age? Is it, you know, dealing with the Elder Gods and convincing them not to destroy us?
No, it's getting Zaros as an Elder God and getting rid of, I mean, one of them.
No.
And then we wrap it up and we're done.
No, my God. Please don't do that. That would be
bad. Don't think that'll happen. No.
It's totally gonna happen. Like,
the players would want that to happen, but I think it's too far.
Yeah, so with killing Guthix. I mean, we jumped the shark, you know, 3 years ago or however long it was.
That was 2013.
I mean, jeez, was it 20? So 5 years ago. Yeah. RIP Guthix. Oh, well. Now we got to get our boy Zaros to be our wingman up there with the Elder Gods, right? I mean.
No.
Not going to happen.
No.
Maybe he'll figure out how to shut him up and never let him out.
Yeah.
And that makes him the Supreme Elder God. And do we really want that?
Supreme Elder God.
Damn. No, because, I mean, Saren's still on his level, right?
Yeah.
So, you still got your yin and your yang, right? I mean, you still got the balance.
All right. Now, another option on this was Gilanar's far future. They didn't say what age that would be, but far into the future.
I mean, they did introduce time travel with the Enchanted Key and, like, in the last Pac-Man quest.
And Mod Raven is on record of hating time travel, so.
Yeah.
I don't know how they would do that, and I don't know what that would look like, but I think I'm always one for time travel stories, so that's interesting. And, you know, so these are the kind of questions you can fill in. What do you like your skills to be? There was no option for it to be unique. I think the options were high XP per hour, high GP per hour, fun. And, you know, that question was horribly designed because fun is a relative term. What is fun to me is not fun to you. So,
yeah. And I mean, that's kind of like that old saying, like, you know, you can have a you could have it good, cheap or fast, but you can only have two. I mean, you should. We want I would like all of those. But if I have to pick two, or I mean, I would let at the very least, I want to be fun and high experience or fun and money or fun.
Another option was social.
Anything. Yeah, I don't care about that, but I want you. I mean, that is really odd the way that's worded.
Yeah, and I mean that precludes something unique like Dungeoneering on that survey, right?
Yeah. For sure, because there's no profit there.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean I don't get it in terms of how that question helps. But at the end of the day, I think I think asking people what they want is a bad idea for this. And, you know, RuneScape was at its best when people would just, you know, see what the update is. And, you know, it wasn't necessarily driven by the players en masse, whereas this seems like, OK, let's kind of see which way we want people to go. And maybe the next skill will be something based on this. But, you know, I think just. Don't ask us about skills.
Yeah, because you always have to go back to that old Henry Ford quote, you know, like if I ask people what they want, they tell me a faster horse. I think that's where we're at with this. It's hard for the community to be able to be visionary enough to bring us something that would be, you know, really cool. You're not going to get the groundbreaking update by asking the community what that skill should be.
Yeah. Okay. Then, you know, they ask about what games you play and what other MMOs you play, both on mobile and on the PC and any other platforms. And then there was a really absurd question. If you could take any other game that you play and apply it to RuneScape lore and RuneScape characters, what would it be?
Oh, that's easy.
Okay.
Shane, come on now.
Oh, we were just talking about that last week, right?
Right, yes.
Like, all right, spill
like
the beans.
They heard us.
Spill the beans.
Elder Scrolls Online.
Yeah.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, just instantly. Yeah.
And that kind of leads into something else they asked. If you could make changes to RuneScape, what would it be? Choices included such as improving the fidelity of graphics, improving the fidelity of the character model, getting rid of the tick system, or getting rid of grid-based movement.
That too. Both of those. Get rid of those. Give me a modern game. That would be so cool. Oh, my God. We'll never get that.
Yeah.
Neither one of them. But I would love it.
See, it's a huge buy-in that they would need to do to remove the tick system. Like, you would basically need to rewrite the farming skill as one of many things in-game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just like construction. They won't do a construction rework because of the amount of buy-in that they need to put the time forward for it.
So. Right. But maybe they – you ever think maybe this survey isn't all about RuneScape?
Yeah, that's where it goes to next, and that's, you know, if you could play any other game that you currently play and have it RuneScape-ified and it even extended out beyond the MMO genre, because I must stress that the question about RuneScape-ifying a game and what would you like to do to RuneScape, those were two different questions that were asked. So, you know, you could right. remove the tick system, you could remove the grid system in RS, but there's also the option to, you know, RuneScape-ify something. And, you know, I'm just wondering how many people are going to say that they'd like to have a RuneScape version of Fortnite.
I don't know how many 12-year-olds play RuneScape still.
Oh, shots fired.
I'm just saying. I mean, by this point, we're all like not 12, right? I mean,
I think there's still young RuneScape players.
Really?
A few.
Maybe yeah, a few.
I think so.
Yeah, you know who they are? The people that suck at Fortnite. So they probably know. I'm just saying.
Oh, you're loaded for bear today, aren't you?
Oh, man. Well, yeah. I mean, come on. No, I want our listeners to be fired up. I want you to do the survey because I don't want a vocal minority to continue to decide things for us. I want everybody to do the survey so we have a good range of perspectives and stuff like that.
What about Overwatch? What about a RuneScape shooter like Ariane and
I don't think
Signature
it worked.
Heroes Plus.
You know, but there have been like Fortnite clones that used melee characters and medieval type things. And it didn't work.
Okay.
I'm forgetting.
You know, speaking of that, Fortnite turns one this week, the Battle Royale mode.
Yes. But you got to give it to them. I mean, they were the right game at the right time, and they are raking in the cash. But that's the last thing that RuneScape needs.
Okay. You know, they tried the card game.
That yeah.
canceled.
You know what? But they were too late on that.
Yeah.
And had they been
like
earlier,
we talked before, they're too late for the MOBA.
Yeah.
The Battle Royale doesn't apply to RS.
And here's the problem. By the time they come out, if they want to do Battle Royale, by the time that would come out, we'll be on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And that's my criticism of Jagex is always a step behind instead of being a step forward.
Yeah.
They should be thinking about the next big thing.
I have a couple ideas for what they could do relatively quickly, you know, and release something by Q1 of 2019, if you entertain these.
Okay.
The first thing that they could do is they could take one of the killer features of RS, you know, Castle Wars, or, you know, maybe even the fabled mobilizing armies, because everyone always talks about that and how useless it is, or even Soul Wars, and, you know, bring that to a massive online audience, you know, release it the same way they did with RS, release it on desktop and mobile at the same time, use the same engine and whatnot, the same technology. And except the difference behind it is that this could be an experiment to remove the tick system and see how fluid RuneScape combat would look in a game that's effectively almost RuneScape, but not RuneScape, and just do it in a limited sense of having, say, you know, maybe kind of like they did with Fun Orb, having three different rooms that you can go into. You can go into the Castle Siege room, you can go into the RTS kind of room that is mobilizing armies, or you can just go into the general brawl room, which is Soul Wars.
Yeah.
So that's one thing they could do and potentially turn out quickly. With that, using RuneScape assets and RuneScape technology and whatnot. I don't know how much engine work would be needed to turn the tick system off.
See, I think that would be cool, but I'm not convinced that these questions aren't actually about the unreleased MMO that we don't know what it is.
They're looking for ways to expand the RuneScape product into something else.
Yeah.
Another one that they could do and they could whip out really quickly, and this one could be out by Q1 definitely of 2019 if they wanted to, is they could do an augmented reality location-based game, kind of like Pokemon Go, but I'm not going to say that exact word. It would basically be real-life clue scrolls. You know, you're going around your city, around your town or whatnot. You have these little things pop up, and then they would give you little items that you would store on your phone. And then you could bring them back to RuneScape and get some.
That would be so cool.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell the questers are here in force this
and
week.
See, that would be exactly be it. It would be effectively a real life quest that you would have to go and pick up. So an example would be is that it could be a clue scroll where you find puzzles along the way, go to locations to find things, or it could be an actual quest where you go to these different locations, then you're either presented with a puzzle on your phone and then it kicks it back to RuneScape next time you open it up, or I don't know, I think there's lots of options for something like that,
like virtual geocaching.
Yeah,
Tycho would love it.
Tycho would
That would be so cool.
And see, we got Derp on board.
Yeah, I want this now. Yeah,
but those are the two that I immediately thought of when I saw this, and sadly, there wasn't options for anything like that. So,
yeah.
But I don't really have much else to say on this survey, except it's really big, and you have a chance to win this this piece of artwork. So,
yeah, and just please fill it out, because if you don't, it's only going to be the people that, I mean, you know what I'm thinking, right, Shane?
Yeah.
The loudest people are going to have much more of a say than they probably should have proportionally. So,
yeah.
So fill it out. It's like voting. You got to do it.
So before we wrap the RS segment up, there's one other big piece of news this week. And normally we don't talk about community minutia and whatnot, because that's not what the show is about. But I think this time it's warranted, and it's warranted for good reason on that. And the reason for this is that the RuneScape Wiki is moving off of Wikia, and they're moving to two new URLs, RuneScape.wiki and oldschool.runescape.wiki, and they are going to be merged with all the changes that have been made on the current RS wiki, and they want everyone to move over to the new URLs. And you know, normally this is something that is that's going to be a fairly innocuous thing to do, right? Well, there's actually one more thing as to why this is a really big deal, and that is that the RuneScape Wiki is being paid a fee by Jagex to maintain the wikis and the servers. So effectively what's going to be happening with this is that Jagex will be funding the RuneScape Wiki, and it's going to remain community edited and community run. The RuneScape Wiki will get a link on the front of the RuneScape webpage, and Jagex is going to encourage more usage of the RuneScape Wiki. They say that there's not going to be any, you know, outright control of what's on the wiki, aside from the fact that the wiki is not going to be able to run anything illegal or anything bad when it comes to advertisements or anything, you know, pornographic in nature, which, you know, you would expect from the RuneScape Wiki. And Jagex is also going to have a final say on any advertisements that are run on the RS Wiki as well. I don't know if that cough was intentional.
No. Okay. No, I've got a bit of a cold.
Okay. All right. They get to use the RuneScape and old school RuneScape trademarks and copyrights. Offensive content is kept off the website. Information that may violate the privacy of anyone working for Jagex can be removed on request. No advertisements will be run that are not approved by Jagex, and Jagex will have one advertising space available for use on the website. And the example they give here is that they're effectively advertising the Giant Mimic promotion on this. So this is all going to happen over the next number of days. And, you know, it's happening relatively quick, but they weren't allowed to talk about it because they were still finalizing it. And that's just the way things work in business and whatnot. And, you know, given the fact that this was on a Wiki, the provider of wikis and whatnot, they're not going to easily be able to move everyone over. You know, if you search for RuneScape Wiki in Google, you're going to get RuneScape.wiki, right? Whereas, you know, it's going to take a while for the new RuneScape.wiki and whatnot to gain prominence on that. So that's going to be a question going forward with this. October 2nd is launch day. So
that's awfully cool. That's like, wow.
Yeah. And you know, they had to basically finalize the deal and whatnot before doing it. And that's precisely why it took so long with this. So now, you know, I've heard mixed thoughts on this, you know, thoughts good and bad. You know, personally, I don't like the idea of the biggest source that was effectively a fan site becoming funded by Jagex. And, you know, we're going to have to be completely honest here in that saying being funded by Jagex effectively makes the RuneScape Wiki now part of Jagex. It's lost its independence with this in terms of, you know, being an independent body. Whether or not that's a good thing, that's up for debate. You know, personally, as a fan site owner, fan sites do need a certain level of independence, especially if they're running things like RSBNB Informer and RSBNB Update. You know, at this point, the RuneScape Wiki is effectively going to be a part of Jagex, even though it's still run by the community and has the same directors and whatnot for it. So, you know, I see the issue of independence as one potential thing going forward. But on the other hand, it's a really good opportunity to solidify things, let's just say, I think, in terms of the knowledge base around this game. So,
well, if first you don't succeed, just go and buy a successful wiki, right?
Yeah.
I worry about the independence as well.
Yeah.
Because and here's where I'm coming from is, okay, say Mod Tembo doesn't want drop table calculations to get out, and someone has figured it out.
Yeah.
Normally that would go on the wiki.
Yeah.
Well, now Jagex can be like, no.
Yeah.
Pull it. And they're going to have to pull it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't love this.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull up the contract. There was actually one of those gotcha clauses in the contract here. Let's see. Privacy, advertising space. I'm not sure. Not sure what it was, but I thought when I was reading this, I thought that there was definitely something that could be done. Apparently it is in the contract. Weird Gloop is the company that was set up to handle this, and that's what you do when you're setting up one of these websites. Weird Gloop is the company, and will retain final creative control on this.
Huh. Well, we know how that works, though, right? Yeah, you have creative control, but you want that money too, right? You don't want to anger. You don't want to bite the hand that feeds you. So.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And you know, I don't think anything bad is necessarily going to happen about this, but it's a level of independence that is gone.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, I think it's a good step forward in the sense of the knowledge base of RuneScape being expanded now. Like, the old wiki was so bad, and with the fact that Jagex now like essentially owns this new actually good knowledge base is probably good for new players. Like, the sense that it's actually integrated into RuneScape itself.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, they said with this they could, you know, have a search bar in game, so you search for something and it opens the wiki. That's one thing.
Oh, for real?
That. Yeah. They said that is something that could be done. They could link RuneScape accounts to it. So if you want to edit the wiki, it would be tied to your RS account.
Oh, that's...
So they could tie it in like they do with Twitch.
So this is a good...
It's a good thing, but it's a give and take situation.
Yeah.
It's a good, bad kind of thing.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So... But, you know, I think when it comes down to it at the end of the day... we're just gonna have to watch and see what happens with this. And you know, if they're gonna be doing this, they should also take control of the RuneScape subreddit and you know, inject some civility into that place, because they always post there, right? So why not inject some civility into that as well? and take control of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be happy
with
that.
Does that mean if they tried to give us bunches and bunches of Jagex money, you wouldn't want it, Shane? Because I would convince you to take the money. I need a job.
Well, it's like the discussion we had on the PMOD episode. I wouldn't even take PMOD.
I know you are pure of your convictions, and I am not so much. So.
Well, I mean,
I am, but I mean, just,
I mean, there's a Ferengi rule of acquisition that says every man has his price.
There you go.
And that's true.
Right?
Here it is. The contract is up for renewal every 12 months. Should the contract terminate by not renewing or early for other reasons, all support and licenses and funding cease. The domains are returned to Jagex. And if the contract is terminated for a reason other than by us breaching it, Jagex won't use any domain with the term wiki in it for 6 months.
Hmm. All right, well, that sounds like lawyer speak, and
I'm not sure. And I mean, 6 months to set up a wiki. You know, you're not that's not enough time on the internet to, you know, get something going like this. So, I mean, you know, for all intents and purposes, this could be terminated, and you know, the wiki could, you know, disappear for 6 months in RuneScape.wiki. But when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, you're still going to have 6 months to get back onto Wikia or get somewhere else. So. I don't know. I think there's definitely stuff in this contract that wasn't published on this post, because there are, you know, anytime you're looking at one of these contracts, there needs to be a section of it that outlines termination of it by both parties. Mm-hmm. And we're not seeing that. So we don't know what that could be consisting of right now. So that's just something to keep in mind going forward. I don't know. We'll see how this goes. If it goes well, I think they should take over the RuneScape subreddits.
Now that I'd be in favor of.
All right.
All in.
All right. So we're going to move on to questions right now. But first, I'd just like to take a moment to thank our wonderful Patreon supporters this week. In force, we have Cody T, Nora, Kyle, and Brock H. Thank you guys once again for your continued support of RSBNB Update. We'll have the monthly bite out before the month is up this month. We're covering the different kinds of RuneScape players, so that one will be a fun one to talk about. And in case you're wondering what this is all about, you can head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB. And for $1 a month, as little as $1 a month, you will receive a special mention in our show notes and early access to show notes on our recording day or before if the show is already formed. And if you want to up it to $3 a month, you'll receive a special VIP rank on Discord, a special mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show, which are wonderful for weeks like last week where we listened to new RuneScape music. So that's what you get with that tier. And for $5 a month, you get a shout-out every week on the podcast and exclusive access to the clips that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And we are already doing our monthly bit. We are doing our video shows, and if we reach $60 a month, we'll be doing a live stream every Monday, I think. Maybe every Tuesday, depending on the update, with Tanis's thoughts on it, and sharing that with the community. So all of that and more can be found at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thank you, everyone, for your wonderful support.
Thank you.
All right, so we're going to move on to questions right now. We have a number of them. The first one is an audio question from Parnassius.
Hey guys, Pern here with a little question regarding my surprise favorite update of the year so far, and that is the player-owned farm. This has been an excellent update, but if I have one minor complaint, it's the farmer's market and selling our bred animals to them. While I understand they didn't want the rich to just continuously buy animals and max it out, I feel that the sort of 12, 8, and 6 selling quota, and the fact that the large pen animal buyers appear every 3 days and the medium pen buyers every 2 days, it really limits those of us who are really enjoying the update. I'm just dropping so many of my bred creatures now because, you know, the traits aren't good and I don't want to go on a haggle on world to trying to sell them. I just want to enjoy the farm itself. Do you think there should be an unlock where we can sell more animals to the buyers? Yeah, perhaps an unlock that makes the medium and large buyers appear more frequently. Perhaps they just introduce a scaling sales market, similar to what they did with the corrupted scarabs in Menophos, whereby once you reach a certain number, the returns diminish by 10%. So, for example, if I sold my first 12 rabbits at 30 beans, the next 12 will sell for 27, and then if I have another 12 after that, it'll be 24, and so on, down to a point where you'd only be getting sort of one or two beans per animal. This would work nicely on all the animals being a percentage drop. Imagine, you know, you sell your first six dragons at 2,000 beans, then the next six you'll only get 1,800 and so forth. Even if they made it a 20% reduction per grouping, or, you know, 10% for the small, 15% for the medium, 20% for the large, I think it would benefit the farm greatly, especially since they don't stack in the bank, and dropping them is the only real option. It just feels like sort of a waste. Looking forward to your discussion on this, and as always, happy escaping to you all.
An update that allows people to sell NPC or animals infinitely would not be good, because as I have outlined before, you get your pens going and you get your animals breeding, you get zygomites and you get dragons going. You're gonna have, you know, at least one dragon and one zygomite appearing every day, and that's 2,800 beans. And if you're lucky, you could potentially get other dragons and other zygomites as well, putting you up to that many beans right now as is. So imagine that number increasing even further beyond that. So I think infinite is definitely a no-go. And, you know, I don't know. I don't deal in the small animals. What do you guys think on those? You guys deal in those, Tanis?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I do the chims.
And?
I think we could increase the number a little bit. I probably wouldn't do an infinite thing, but maybe there could be an increase to the number that you would sell. Personally, I've never ran into this problem. So kudos to Pern there. He's knocked it out. You know, maybe instead of 12, maybe 16 on the small, because they do breed, I mean, pretty quickly. I don't even have mine in a breeding pen. I just have the, you know, the thing where they can breed in their normal pen, and I usually get at least two every time I go check, which is probably like twice a day.
Yeah. So, and, you know, I think the best course of action that they could do for this would be to, you know, if they were to do something like that, implement, you know, the percent reduction for beans. I would just keep everything at a flat 20% as to not, you know, encourage the farming of smaller animals, because, you know, the medium ones, even if they were at 15% reduction for that, that would still be a lot coming from the zygomites. So I think they need to, you know, I think we're actually at a good state right now, because the way I'm going and the way this is going, if there was any more to this, if you could sell any more than you can currently sell today, this would become the main method for training and farming via the magic beans, which I don't think is a good idea. You know, if I was to do anything, I would make it prohibitively expensive. I would make it 10,000 beans to unlock the cap for the small pens, 15,000 for the medium pens, and 20,000 beans for the large pens, just to, you know, be able to sell the extra animals like that. So it would need to be prohibitively expensive, I think. And I don't know. I think we're fine where we're at today, honestly. Because I can never sell enough dragons in a day to make the person go away.
Yeah, I can't either.
So, though maybe it's because I'm lacking males currently. I only have one male.
Well, see, the thing with this is, though, once you have too many, then you're in this spiral.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like once you have sold six in a day, and that now you're in a spiral. And so I think that's kind of, I mean, that's why I would maybe increase it a little bit, but maybe not do a whole unlock.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the point being made about bank space is quite relevant here. Like a day of release, there are people who had like tons and tons of rabbits just in their bank ready to sell.
Yeah. And
maybe the problem is that the things you get with beans are just too cheap or something. Like magic beans are definitely overpowered like that. But maybe just the solution is then to make those more expensive and not limit the amount of animals you can sell. Or like find a solution in a different direction rather than limiting bank space in like even harder.
Yeah, and you know, I don't have a good enough answer on this because I'm short on males and I don't have enough males to breed outside of the breeding pen for the dragons. But if the zygomites are any indication, I get one or two baby zygomites a day just from the medium pen.
Yeah.
So, I think the best option would be a tail off. Just have a decrease to, down to 10% of the bean value at the end of it, kind of like the double XP used to, like 0.9, 0.8, all the way down to 10% worth. So at the end, a dragon is only worth, 200 beans. And if you're going to give a dragon away for 200 beans, you're kind of crazy at that point, I think.
Yeah.
I think that would be the best way of going about that. And, I mean, if they even wanted to discourage that, they could make it still a purchasable option for, say, 10, 12, and 15K beans for the small, medium, and large pens. So I think that would be the best way of going about it right now, rather than, changing the cost of anything or just, outright allowing it to happen. So, but, and, it's good because that way then people can't just, go to World 2, spend a billion GP and buy, 100 mm-hmm. dragons and, trade them all in for beans and then sell those beans for the elder wood seeds and then just do that on double XP weekend. And lo and behold, 200 mil farming.
Boom.
Yeah. All right. I think that handles that one. I'm good with that. You guys good?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. The next one is from Bill. Hello, Shane and crew. I'm a returning player and having played sporadically since RuneScape Classic, this time around so much has changed that I no longer recognize the game. It doesn't resemble at all what RuneScape used to be like, and I have several questions. And he says, number one, how do you actively start doing the PVM content in RS? Is there an explain like M5 for this, starting from the very basics like revolution bars, ability rotations, all the way to gear setup and boss mechanics? It's obvious that there's so much content there, but most of it is so opaque it's really hard to know where to start. Number two is how do you get the Nox equipment when you have no money and skilling just doesn't make anything? Am I doomed to be spending hours upon hours popping div bubbles like Tanis does? what's the deal with people keeping their comp capes at any cost? Surely there was a time before they had the comp cape where why did they rush through any new content then complain instead of playing it through properly? Thanks for all the work you put into the show every week. They always brighten up my Fridays, sometimes when I listen and sometimes when I stop listening. I look forward to your answers on the show. Thank you for those. So, number one, I'm going to direct you to the Combat Academy in Lumbridge for this, actually. Specifically Revolution Bars and Action Bars. They updated the combat tutorial not too long ago. And this combat tutorial effectively copy-pasted the recommended Revolution Action Bars from the RS Wiki into game. So literally all you need to do is head to the Lumbridge Combat Center. You don't even need to head there. Just equip your armor and the weapons you want to use. Right-click the little cog on your combat action bar and choose Setup Action Bar, and it will give you an action bar that is suitable for Revolution and the weapons that you are using. So that's one thing. And, failing that, I'm going to include a link to the shows or to the to the RS Wiki page of the action bars, because, you know, we've talked about that a lot before, the Revolution action bars and which one is the best one to go with and what's the best way to go about doing this. And on this page, there's ones for all the various types and whatnot, you know, melee, magic, ranged, and so on and so forth. So there will be a link to that in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And, you know, we also talked about this combat stuff on the Patreon special about EOC, Tanis, the one you missed. And yeah, this was very revealing to everyone. And basically, the nutshell of that was that we came to the conclusion that the combat system is hard to master, but once you know it, it's actually very powerful. So, you know, I think, you know, just wrapping your head around the action bar rotations and whatnot is a good start. And, you know, to be honest, if you're just doing Slay, you really don't need that much in terms of optimization. Granted, you just don't want to start slapping things on there, but I think we can all agree at this point that setting it up in-game is going to be the best way to go using that tool, right?
Yeah, I was thinking, didn't we have – I thought we had some action bar suggestions on our SBNB.
We have an action bar combat calculator ability share, yeah, but we don't have action bars that we have set up on there that are recommended at this point.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I knew we had something like that. Yeah, I think, you know, starting out the Combat Academy, it's probably a good place, but I would definitely go, you know, I would set up with Revolution to get familiar with how the abilities work, and then also triggering your own thresholds and ultimates. That'll give you a chance to, like, you know, keybind those to where you want, or, you know, whatever, get them on your mouse. But it'll kind of give you an idea of when to, like, trigger those things off. And I actually think that Slayer is a good way to develop that in the beginning. Now, I'm not talking like trash mobs. I'm not telling you, you know, but certain, you know, intermediate to high level Slayer mobs, you're going to be able to be using your thresholds and your ultimates and stuff. You're going to use
what kind of tasks? Death Swiftness.
Celestial Dragons, you'll use Death Swiftness a lot. Say Abyssal Demons, you're going to be using Hurricane. Is it Hurricane? Hurricane, the melee. A lot of AoEs, stuff like that. And then when you're transitioning into bossing, if you've been around since Classic, then I mean, you've probably done God Wars 1. You know, you're probably familiar with that one, but I mean, that's obviously where you would start, right? And then once you have that down, I think then naturally you move on to God Wars 2, right? But once you have God
Queen Black Dragon first, maybe.
Okay, QBD, yeah, QBD. QBD is kind of a strange duck, though. It's got a few different. It's not just a straight fight with that one, okay, though. I mean, I don't know. Like, if you're just wanting to learn, like, the straight fight, I would go to God Wars 2 at that point, because that adds a little bit more mechanics, but not too much. Like, you can do it. Once you're past that point, that's when you need friends, basically, to start doing some of the higher-level PVM. You need a Dave in your life to carry you on their shoulders if need be. You know? But that would be, I mean, that's my recommendations.
All right. You have any combat recommendations, Derp?
I'm not much of a combat person, okay, myself, but all I reckon right, there's some good Revolution bar guides on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we found, you know, really just using the in-game setup at this point is actually a good way to go based on the changes that were made to it. So that's that. And Bill, I'm actually going to send you something as a reply to this question in the email as well. That'll help with this too. So look for that. Number two, the Nox equipment. When you have no money and skilling doesn't make anything.
Yeah. There are ways around that, though. because you don't have to start off with Nox, right?
Correct.
Yes, that's best in slot. That's what that's what you want to aim for, but there is absolutely nothing
wrong. And for comparison's sake right here, going from a tier 90 Nox weapon down to a tier 85 is about 6% damage difference.
6%. Exactly. And
those you're not going to need that for Slayer. That's 6%.
Yeah, until you have the money for Nox, use the God Wars 2 tier 85 weapons. Those are they're cheap.
Another thing, if you have been doing your ports, the ports weapons are really good.
Oh yeah, yeah. They don't have a staff, but that's
the mining and smithing rework, when that comes out, you'll be able to make your own.
Yeah, that's going to be wonderful. And as for right now, money making, get on your farm grind, man, because it's less now, but farmers were making okay money.
It all comes down to the herbs.
Yeah, but just with the player on farm, people were making decent money. If you want something a little bit funner than popping bubbles, Slayer is still a good way for you to make some money and learn the combat system as you go. So, I guess I recommend that.
Yeah, and if you're also in a gambling mood, you could do hard clue scrolls. I think those are the best for money out there, but that's going to be hit or miss, right? I think.
Yeah. Shane, with all the just sadistic suggestions here, go beat your head on the wall for a while,
What is sadistic about any of this?
Clue scrolls are so hard, dude.
Really?
I think
1700 clues dry of a die. I think.
Oh.
Around 1700. Oh. Yeah.
Oh.
Clues aren't thanks to me.
I hurt for you. Ouch. Jesus.
But maybe my luck will transfer to your audience and they will get all the dice on their first clue.
Wow. Hmm. Yeah. Just looking at the God Wars 2 stuff, the tier 85 ranged weapon is only 5 mil.
Yeah. And I think the dual wield, the blades, right, that you get from Furies, those are really cheap too, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
I thought they were, yeah.
So.
But the thing about God Wars 2 weaponry is that it's tier 80 damage and tier 90 accuracy, I think.
Yeah.
So if you're doing glaives, you might just as well do the Royal Crossbow, I guess.
Yeah. For ranged Royal Crossbow, but for melee, there's really not that many other options out there.
That's fair.
And I think tier 80 accuracy is, or sorry, tier 80 damage is still fine for Slayer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and it's not as if you can't do a lot of the bosses without that. Now, granted, you're not going to probably do next, and you're not going to go on raids, but you can do God Wars 1, God Wars 2, QBD. You can do all of that with tier 80, tier 85 weapons. Are you going to be able to show off to your friends? No. But will you be able to get efficient kills? Yeah.
All right. So basically, look at the tier 85 God Wars dungeon weapons. What are the melee ones called? I don't remember the melee one. What's the tier 85 weapon?
The Blade of Avarice and the Blade of Nymora. And the Dragon Rider Lance is also
the Dragon Rider
Lance. Yeah. Okay. That one's a little pricier because of Aftershock, but it's an excellent substitute for a Scythe. If you don't have the money for a Scythe, then the Lance is definitely for you.
And I think we should clarify that we're talking about the Scythe and the Dragon Rider Lance, because those are two-handed weapons. And the best abilities, the best AoE abilities in game right now, which you want for Slayer, for things like Abyssal Demons and whatnot, are two-handed AoE. You can do dual wield the AoE, but you're not going to get the same amount of damage output. You're not going to get as many choices for abilities. So that's why two-handed is best for this. We would like there to be more parity in the system, but that's just not what we have right now. So
yeah, and I'm sure if you really wanted to go all out, you could perk those weapons up as well.
Yeah, that would help a bit.
Give them a little more.
You might be able to perk them to a point that you could bring them up to tier 85 damage, I think.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you could get to 90, but you could definitely get to 85. So.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's the deal with people keeping their comp capes at any cost? We're actually going to be talking about that on this month's monthly bit.
Yeah. You know, I don't get the complaining of it, but I do get like the drive to keep or to get it back.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes perfect sense
to me. And I think part of the problem is that for the longest time, it was a moving target. You know, Jagex set it up and it was governed by the forums and whatnot, and there was no clear guidelines what should be added. Then, I mean, if you look at the trim, sure, the comp cape is good. But if you look at trim, you got absolute levels of insanity to get that, you know, 5,000 Castle Wars games. And back in the day, that's been taken down a bit because of the change in how the tickets work. But still.
Oh, yeah. Look at the Chompy Birds. You need like, what, 1,200 Chompy Birds right. or something crazy like that? Yeah.
I'm never going to go for comp or trim.
I'm still in comp pursuit, but I get deterred and I get to, you know, every once in a while you get a, I don't know, you feel like a 120, you know? So you gotta do it.
Yeah. You know, I think that's because you've leveled everything up to 99. You've got the 120s that count to 120. Unless you absolutely find a skill passionate, you're not really going to level it to 120 unless there's a reward for it. And, you know, it's just people wanting to continue playing their same accounts and have a reward always for doing that. But there is a limited pool of rewards that are available. So that's why people end up doing comp and trim. I'd like to see these same people that go for comp and trim all the time go for Master Quest.
You know, I had a trim comp tell me that because he had both. He has no.
Oh yeah, Master Quest is harder.
And Master Quest. Yep, that's exactly what he said. Yeah. Which it was hard for me to believe.
And but, you know, we could go back to the same thing. Why isn't Master Quest a requirement for trim?
Yeah. That's a good question.
Of course, we are biased here, two-thirds of this panel.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
Yeah, but I'm not, and I actually think that is perfectly fair. I mean, lore should have a place when it comes to trimmed, you know? Not necessarily comp, but when it comes to trimmed comp, I look at it as like that's completing the game. You've completed the content of the game. So... And trimmed is like that much extra. So if you haven't, you know, gotten all the lore drops and all that, then.
But hey, we got something to help us this week with that.
That's right. Yeah. Get the lore hound out there.
So
I think the other side of this debate is that like the Master Quest cape is like just the biggest lore achievement you can have, and just putting it as a requirement for completionist sake just feels kind of wrong, I guess.
Mm.
Like, it should just be a cape for the diehard lore enthusiasts that are in RuneScape.
And, okay, I see that. And, you know, when people go for a cape and whatnot, they just, you know, constantly rush for it, and that kind of devalues it, just like 99s were devalued with everyone rushing for them for the sake of doing it. And, you know, I honestly don't get the reasoning why people do that. And, you know, we saw this with the player-owned farm. Dragon Eggs 40 million on launch.
Yeah.
So it does have some downsides and whatnot, and we actually are going to be talking about this weekend on the monthly bit. So but I agree. I call myself a casual player in that regard, that I just play through the content and get to things when I do. So
I think the problem with comp also is that it's the best best in slot cape.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think that's one of the main issues with comp.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's fair. That's why, like, if I was going to add that, I mean, I would add it to the trim, because in my mind, I look at trimmed as like that should be the most exclusive, hardest cape with the most stuff that you have to do to earn it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But that's just my opinion.
All righty. Yeah. Thank you, Bill. Next one is from Tycho. So this one reads as follows. Quest Point Shop is now out, and with it we meet May and the Lorehound, the latter we keep as a pet. What people may or may not know is that the community on RuneScape's official Discord server had a large influence in certain parts of the update. A few examples are the examine messages, dialogues with the Lorehound, and the quest NPCs you can transform into, with the Ring of Quests, of course. Two of the Lorehound's dialogues were suggested by me and a few others on that Discord, and it's thus no surprise we're quite proud of that on release. You have talked about how Jagex should be less dependent on the community and go in a direction that's healthy for the game in the long run. My questions are thus, do you believe that this update should have been less interactive with the community? Personally, I think it's wonderful to support the developers and see the content come to life. Also, what is your opinion on closed player testing? On one side, it could be seen as a way to ensure quality before the release, and on the other, you could see it as favoritism when it comes to choosing the players. I hope you have your bag ready to go, because I will see you very soon in London. Don't forget to bring a souvenir from Canada, and I'm looking forward to giving you a bear hug to remember. Cheers from Tycho.
Oh, he's just a big old bear.
You know, I think when it comes to lore and examine info and dealing with the community on this kind of update, I think that's absolutely fine. Compared to, you know, if they were just going to, you know, outright, you know, say, hey, what should our agenda be for the next 6 months? Yada, 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 ding, 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 and off we go, right?
Yeah.
But lore, examines, and whatnot, that's fine. I think that's actually really good. Where I would draw the line is putting people like Preslake in the game, because I think that's obviously breaking the fourth wall. And I personally don't think the achievements of that character are you know, worth an in-game NPC at this point. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Or what's his face when they acknowledged and celebrated the bug abuse of
Duriel.
Duriel.
Falador Massacre. Yes.
Yeah.
I
agree with you, Shane. Like, in this kind of an update, perfectly fine.
Oh, yeah.
This is the kind of update that you want.
Community feedback. Lore is sometimes the best.
But, right. It's just that, like, when it comes to quest and stuff like that, quests, I don't think you can.
Quest lines, quest directions.
Yes. Yeah, like you can't write by committee. I'm not a fan of that. And when you're asking someone what's the next big thing, you can't ask the community about that, because they're just, most people are not going to visualize what that could be, and we shouldn't. I mean, we're the consumers, right?
And that's why, like, people can play old school if they want that.
Yeah, exactly.
So. But yeah, I mean, this is personally fine, and I think it's actually really good that they did this. So it's kind of two different pages there to be looking at. Derp, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I'm not really sure, actually. I think the points you raise are fair, but Old School as a game with a lot of community involvement has been very popular. And I mean, maybe it wouldn't work for RS3, because it's just a separate game and it's evolved completely differently, of course. But there is something to be said about community involvement, because, well, Old School makes it work in that sense. But yeah, definitely, I think JGAG itself should mainly, well, they know best what the best direction is, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I'm not sure.
And in regards to player testing, I think you absolutely do need to do player testing. Closed player testing is the best way to go, because then you can sign them to a physical, legally binding NDA, and you can guarantee that they're not going to go on social media and blab about the update, or, you know, say what the drops are and whatnot. And You know, granted that you might give these people a few extra days, chance to do that. But hey, I mean, if Jagex didn't want that, they could say, you know, your RuneScape account, Shane12088, that comes in for playtesting, is not going to be allowed to interact with this content for 2 weeks after release.
Now, when you say that, does that mean that you have to, you have to do this testing on site?
Yeah, you would definitely have to do it on site and sign the NDA.
See, then I don't agree with that. I think you could sign an NDA because, I mean, if you're doing that, then what are you going to do? You're getting people from Cambridge, that's it? Or the surrounding area?
Yes, because they did have that poll that came out that said, would you like to play test? And, you know, you have to be able to make it to Cambridge on your own.
Yeah, that's not right.
And they've already had, you know, numerous waves of them come in since the end of August.
But look, what I mean, you would have to have the means to get yourself over to Cambridge.
Yeah.
You know, this is I don't feel like that's right.
So basically we're talking about people who are going to be living in the bottom part of the UK then.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, or filthy rich. I mean, why couldn't it be a secured playtest server that you did sign an NDA for and could do it from anywhere in the
world? But they've never done anything like that before.
I just think that would be more fair. Otherwise, it's not a good reflection.
Yeah, and see, the reason I went immediately to close playtest in person is because when you're testing software with people and you're trying to, you know, let's just say you're measuring something for usability, for example, right? Mm-hmm. You want to have someone who can sit next to the person when they're using it to monitor where they first move their mouse. Whereas if you were doing that online, you wouldn't get that. So there are things
could be watching you though, couldn't they? I mean, they could be watching your screen.
I mean,
They could do that.
You're right. They could. But I don't know if anyone's ever done remote beta testing like that before.
I was just curious because yeah. I totally agree with what you're saying when it comes to I want the best testing environment, but at the same time it's hard for me to get past this is a very small pool of people geographically or socioeconomically, and to me that is going to skew the results. You know, you're only going to get certain kind of people that will ever be able to test.
Yeah.
It's not fair.
Yeah.
That's right. So, all right. Let's see. Anything else on this one? I mean, there's the bear hug we can both look forward to, I guess.
RuneFest. Yes.
All right. If you guys want to send your own questions in, next week on the show will be Tanis and Earth.
Holding the fort down.
Email them.
Nervous yet, Shane?
No. Questions okay. @rsbnb.com. You can also call or text to 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632, or leave us a DM on Twitter @rsbnb. All right. So moving into tech news right now, Google Chrome 69 and its forced login, privacy backlash as it's being called. So basically what ended up happening with this is that if you had Google Chrome and you were signed into, say, Gmail or YouTube, Google would take this as an okay and it would sign you into the Chrome browser. And in doing that, it lets them sync various aspects of Chrome, like history if you choose to, or bookmarks or tabs, open tabs and whatnot, sync them between different Chrome instances that are logged into your Google account. So basically what this meant is that they took Chrome as an extension of one of their services like Gmail or YouTube and whatnot and just automatically signed you in. And, you know, there are people who didn't want this because they didn't want necessarily to have their – browser history synced or their bookmarks synced or their tabs synced or whatnot with this. And this was something that was done without people's consent. And you can tell this if this happened to you by going to the new tab page in Google Chrome. And if you see your avatar, your Google picture up at the top right, that means that you have been signed in to Google Chrome. And you can know if you weren't previously because you wouldn't have seen that picture there. So this will be reversed in Chrome 70 when that comes out in mid-October. But until then, this is a activity that is going to persist within Google. So, and they say Google claims that this does not mean that Chrome Sync gets turned on. But basically what it does is that it links your Chrome browser to your Google account. And you might have sync on, or you might, you know, elect to not have sync on. But it's basically signing you into Google when you might not necessarily want to be signed into Google. So I didn't notice this because I'm signed into Chrome, but I don't know if you guys signed into Chrome or if you even use Chrome, but this is just something to be aware of with Google Chrome.
Okay.
Just as you were talking, I noticed a little button at the top right of my screen that I'm logged into Google Chrome.
Yep. Yep. There you go.
There you only go. Just now. Yeah.
So, and I don't know. I don't know if this is as big of, is this a big privacy concern, Tan, as compared to where we've been?
No. I mean, compared to Facebook.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Fair enough. Well then, just a little bit of a PSA out there to everyone who uses Google Chrome. Speaking of Facebook, you ready for what's next?
Oh, no. I didn't mean to.
Well, we're going that way.
Okay.
Facebook effectively allows anyone who is on the platform but might not have entered a phone number to be targeted by their own phone number. So.
What?
Yep. So if you use Facebook and you don't have your phone number inputted into your Facebook account, but someone on your friends list has you in their contacts book with your phone number, they will make that association based on your name and link that phone number that your friend had for you to your Facebook account under the hood.
It's got to stop. I mean, can we do a segment on how to delete your Facebook? Because I don't even know how to delete it, but I'm ready. I'm ready. That's ridiculous. Like, that's not even, like, that's your friend's contact. So not Facebook, but their contacts.
Because when you sign in with Messenger or Facebook, it asks for permission to see your contacts.
What if you say no?
If you say no, then it won't upload the contacts to Facebook and this won't happen. But people just want to bring their address book into Facebook so they have all their friends on Facebook, so they press yes regardless.
I don't think I ever have, but still.
But if anyone you know, like if I had on Facebook, if I had you on Facebook and I had your phone number in my contacts book and I linked that up, but you didn't have yours on Facebook, it would make that link towards you.
See, that's just that's ridiculous. Now think about all the crap that has went on the last year with Analytica. What was it? Cambridge Analytica and all these places. Yeah. Now you're going to start getting phone calls on your cell phone.
Oh no, they're not using it for that. Really? They're using it for ads.
Yet.
And let's just go into the story here. So this researcher here at Gizmodo, who posted this article last week, ran an ad on Facebook targeted at a specific computer science professor named Alan Mislove. And Mislove is studying how privacy works on social networks and had a theory that Facebook was letting its advertisers reach users with contact information collected in surprising ways. So these two were testing this out. And basically, this guy directed the ad to display to a Facebook account connected to the landline number for Alan Mislove's office, which is a number that Alan Mislove, had never given to Facebook, and he saw the ad within mere hours of this happening. And then when he clicked, why am I seeing this ad? It says, one of the reasons you're seeing this ad is that Real Future has added to a list of people they want to reach on Facebook. They were able to reach you because you're on a customer list that was collected by Real Future and its partners, or you provided with them, or you provided them with your contact information off Facebook. But that's not what happened.
So they were lying about it on top of it.
Yeah. Even though someone, you know, just purchased the ad and had them in the, you know, had the number in their contacts or provided it to the ad agency, as they're saying happened here. Now, you know, with this, you know, example that it gives is that, you know, Facebook lets people upload a list of phone numbers or email addresses. It will then, you know, put them in front of accounts associated with that contact information. They say a clothing retailer can use this to place an ad for address in Instagram feeds for women who have purchased from them before. Targeted advertising. Now, this is where it gets really scary in what we were talking about. It says you might assume you could go to your Facebook profile and look at your contact and basic info page to see what email address and phone numbers are associated with your account, and thus what the advertisers can use to target you. But as is so often the case with this highly efficient data miner posing as a way to keep in contact with your friends, it's going about it in a less transparent and more invasive way. Facebook is not content to use the contact information you willingly put into your Facebook profile for advertising. It is also using the contact information you handed over for security purposes and contact information you didn't hand over at all, but that was collected from other people's contact books. And Facebook calls this shadow contact information.
I feel like this either is or should be illegal. Because you didn't consent to anything. Like, you did not willingly give your information. You did not click, I agree. Like, how is that legal? I'm sure it ain't some places. I'm sure some places it's not.
I don't know.
Come on, EU. You always have to come to the rescue to get our butts out of this crap.
Yeah. And, you know, the users can't see their shadow contact information because it would violate the other user's privacy, they say.
But it doesn't violate your privacy to steal your stuff from them. Okay.
Yeah. So,
see, this is what happens.
This is what happens when you sign up for Facebook and Instagram now.
It's also what happens when you don't spank your children and Mark Zuckerberg. I'm kidding. I don't spank mine, but someone needs to slap that guy. I mean, seriously, just a good.
Anyway. Yeah. So, I mean, the only way to really go about this is to either delete the Facebook account, log out, clear your cookies, and forget about it. Or use, actually, probably not even use something like Ghostery to do that, because it's still grab you in based on your Facebook account. So it's such a mess.
Delete Facebook. I don't know. I don't even know how to delete it. I really would probably do it at this point. No.
All right. Final piece of tech news, a little bit of good news. Extended Fortnite crossplay beta launches on the PS4.
Yeah, we broke the wall.
This is the first time the PS4 is going to be allowing crossplay on their console. They'll be able to play with Android, iOS, Switch, Xbox One, Windows, and Mac versions of Fortnite.
It's a step.
It's a step.
It's a step.
And hopefully it'll happen for other games as well, too.
Oh, I hope.
And,
can't we just be one big gaming happy family?
Yeah, Sony says for 24 years we have strived to deliver the best gaming experience to our fans by providing a uniquely PlayStation perspective. Today, the communities around some games have evolved to a point where cross-platform experiences add significant value to players. In recognition of this, we have completed a thorough analysis of the business mechanics required to ensure that the PlayStation experience for our users remains intact today and in the future as we look to open up the platform.
So thanks, Fortnite. You did the impossible.
Yeah. And then there was a really funny tweet that came from Microsoft on this matter on the Twitter feed for this. The first reply to the Sony tweet is a reply from the Xbox account with two hands up in the air clapping. So. But yeah, I mean, who would have thought Fortnite could break something like that? And Fortnite, you know, turns 1 year old this week, the Battle Royale mode.
Yeah, just 1 year. I mean, wow.
Yep. All righty. Well, I believe that's it for tech news this week. We're going to move on to some other things right now, including the September Skill of the Month update, which is farming, you know.
How's that going, Shane?
You know, I'm still in fifth. I thought I could do more, yeah. But, you know, I just so many other things happening and preparations that I've decided that I'm just going to settle for where I'm at right now. Currently, Sorensen 57 is in first place with 23.7 million experience gained. In second place, we have Poison Nova with 8.1. And in third place, we have Whitey with 5.9 million experience gained.
Wow. So I guess you'll be handing over your straw hat and pitchfork, right?
Yep, like, for the skill like of the month at least. For the skill of the month at least.
Passing it on.
But for the October skill of the month, we have a contest of true endurance. We have agility.
Oh.
That's gonna be interesting to see.
Oh, well, at least I can revel in the pain that all of the contestants will be doing.
Combatants.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, RuneFest is happening next week, and before we go on to the achievements, I just want to share something that we've been working on a little bit, and something that I want everyone to use when we do inevitably go there next week. So, basically, what's happening is through Clan Quest, we're running something called the RuneFest Hub. And what you're going to see on this website at clanquest.org/hub is you're basically going to see any announcements that were announced at RuneFest in terms of news or reveals or any breaking news. That'll be pinned up at the top. Then, on the left-hand side of the screen, there's going to be a Twitter feed featuring Clan Questers who are at RuneFest and tweeting at the event. Derp, if you're on Twitter, let me know and I'll add you to the list. Basically, any tweets from anyone at RuneFest will be right there. Then on the other side of the page, we're going to have a list of community curators who are going to be curating top tweets from the RuneFest 2018 hashtag, the RuneScape accounts, and any other accounts that are putting out interesting tweets on that day. So basically what we want to do is we want to have clanquest.org/hub, the RuneFest hub, being the place that everyone goes to see what's actually happening at RuneFest on that day. So bookmark that page for when RuneFest happens, clanquest.org/hub. It's one of our public-facing features at ClanQuest. So
nice.
Have cool. A look at that. Okay, you guys ready for some achievements?
Sure are.
Let's go.
All right. So starting off this week, we had Cabbage with 99 attack on September 26th. CompSci with 120 constitution also on the 26th. And then Sina ATN with 99 magic on the 25th of September.
And then we have a few crewmates of mine, I see. We have Cabbage with 99 farming on September 24th. Also 99 divination on September 24th. And also 99 Slayer on September 24th. Damn, he's been going hard. And then also Archris, I don't know, with 99 thieving, also on September 24th.
Good job, yeah. Everyone.
Yeah, nice. And then on September 23rd, we have Alarixson with 99 Herblore. Alarixson with 99 Smithing. Alarixson again with 99 Summoning. Alarixson with 99 Cooking. Those are all on September 23rd. And Silverwiz 9 with 99 Engineering on September 22nd.
Good job, everyone. Good job. Nice achievements.
Nice. Very good.
Right. I got to remember Tanis, remember, I got to provide you guys the link to get to source these achievements for next week.
Oh, yeah.
I have to do that.
That would be
all right. Important. So, time for pick of the week. And this is something that's been on the radar for a while. And, you know, I think this is a good time to mention this because, you know, RuneFest week is coming up. And, you know, I think one of the most tedious things that someone can do ever is booking airline tickets. That's something that's hard to do and hard to find. So, you know, Google actually has this service out there called Google Flights. So basically what you can do is you can say where you're going and where you're coming from, and you can, you know, just pop it in whatever you want to do. Let's just say London and see what it pops up. This is going to be super expensive because I'm going to show what the dates look like for RuneFest and whatnot. But if you were going for, say, 2 weeks from October 3rd to the 17th, it would provide you that. And then it would basically show all the different options that you can do to get to the destination from where you are to where you want to go. And the important thing about this is that I don't know how this works in the U.S. or other countries, but only a couple years ago it became illegal for airlines to show a lower price, and then finally when you get to paying, you had to factor in all of the additional costs of taxes and fuel surcharges and the like. This shows everything regardless of that, no matter where you are. So it's going to show the final price for any number of airlines. And you might think that's good, and this is what you can do with it. Well, you can actually also with this explore different price trends so that if you were wanting to see what the price looked like, say, in December, you can see that the price does shift up at the holiday season for that. And then you can fast forward into various times into the next year, and you can see that as we get into summer season, it gets a little bit more expensive again in the middle of tourist season. So there's a graph, and it shows exactly when the costs are expected to be cheapest if you're planning on when you want to go somewhere. That's one thing this can do. Another thing this can do is that if you are looking at a specific flight, you can add this to a tracking list. And what it'll do is that when you start tracking it, it will provide you daily updates by email if the price changes, if it gets less expensive or if it gets more expensive. And then when you look at that, you can go to this URL, and then it will show you a graph of what the prices were for that. And, you know, this is something I think that can be useful to a lot of people. If you're ever planning a trip, you definitely do want to handle the airfare this way, because, you know, it's hard, you know, going to all the different websites and whatnot, never knowing if it's better to, you know, book direct with an airline or book with somewhere like Expedia. But this provides the best option for getting that price. And it also lets you track it in the time leading up to it. So you can see, is this a high price? Is this a low price? Did the price go up or did it go down maybe, you know, $50? And then that might be the time you want to pull the trigger and buy. And it does it with email alerts as well. So it basically allows you to sort all this out. And, you know, it affects simplify purchasing of the tickets. And then when you click purchase, it will just take you right to the airline or the page, and it'll be ready to go for you to enter that information as well. So this is a feature that isn't really known that Google provides, but it's something that was used in planning my RuneFest trip that I did. So definitely have a look at this and see if it's going to be useful to you going for any future trips that you might be taking. And if you're just wanting to go somewhere, you can kind of pull up a map as well, and you can see how much it would cost to go to all the various different destinations from where you're currently at. So that's, you can find it at google.ca or I guess google.com/flights for most people, and it'll put you on the right country with that. So that's Google Flights.
Cool. Good deal.
Yeah. And I don't have a tracked version of it right now, but I can tell you that the graph for seeing the tracked price is actually pretty good. So that's the pick of the week, Google Flights.
Cool.
Good way to get ready for RuneFest. So, yeah. What have we been up to? Let's start with you, Tanis.
Farming, man.
So okay.
The player-owned farm really got me into the skill of farming in general. So,
Good.
Can you ask for anything more out of a skill edition? You know,
because that's pretty good.
Yeah. So I've been doing the player own farm. My dragons are starting to actually, you know, produce, and everything is producing. I finally got all the chims that I need. They're producing. Been doing the Toadplex runs. I mean, that's pretty much been all I've been doing.
But, yeah, see, you can do those Toadplex runs and you can still feel productive even though it's only 5 minutes at a time.
Yeah, so. Oh, for sure.
All right, good. How about you, Dirt?
I just recently got Overloads, so I've been doing some Elite Dungeons, some God Wars Dungeon 2. Okay. And yeah, making the money.
Yeah, have you unlocked many of the combo Overloads yet?
I got the Holy Overload, which
that's
is nice.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah.
The Searing Overload is also one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
So good.
Ready for RuneFest?
Yeah, that's going to be so hype. Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
You're meeting everyone.
Yeah, you're another one that'll be there.
Yeah, I will be there, yeah.
That'll be next week. Tanis and Earth are hosting next week. Sirion and I are going to be providing you guys with a little bit of an extra segment for that, so you guys can listen to that. But you will hear from me in full at some point over the RuneFest weekend, depending on what happens with that. So I don't believe there's anything else left to be said for this. This is one of the final podcasts that I'm recording before we go. So things are getting done, and it's coming. But nonetheless, that's it for this episode of RSBNB Update. You guys will be back next week with the full episode. Best of luck to you guys.
Thank you.
And if you guys want full show notes, you can find that at update.rsbnb.com. And if you want to join us in-game, you can find that at Friends Chat Bits Bytes. And if you want to join the RSBNB Discord, just head on over to rsbnb.com/Discord. That's a short URL for it now. It works. It'll pop you right into our server. And with that being said, we'll see you next week, everyone. Take care.
See ya. Take care.
Bye-bye.